And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with host T. Ramone and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hi, and welcome again to Express Yourself with T. Ramone and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance, and we hope to have an hour of really great conversation here as we really wrap up the college basketball season and the coming to the close of the NBA season. We look forward to that. I know everybody's brackets were busted Sunday night, because I know nobody had Michigan beating Duke, right, except for the people up in Lansing. So the Final Four is here. It'll be here in a couple of days, Saturday, up there in Minneapolis, where we're going to have Auburn taking on Virginia and Michigan State taking on Texas Tech, a team that I didn't pay a lot of attention to this year, but obviously they did their thing without my gaze upon them. So we're looking forward to talking about that and professional basketball as the season ends next week. And we have somebody with us tonight who will be able to talk about both spheres, both college and professional basketball, Sam Mitchell, a great collegiate basketball player at Mercer University, probably the best basketball player in that school's history. Made himself into a tremendous NBA player, an assistant coach, a head coach in the NBA. And I'm thinking, if I'm not wrong, he was coach of the year 1 year. And also he's now back in the collegiate ranks as associate head coach with the University of Memphis as on the bench with a former NBA player, Penny Hardaway. So we look forward to getting his perspective on both places. Roscoe, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. My bracket is not doing so well, and it was busted well before Duke's loss. You know, I mean, Texas Tech, come on, give me a break.
Yeah.
You know, they're just a bad football program. Auburn, I mean, who expects them to shoot like that? And, you know, I think you probably should just go ahead and give them the national championship now just based on the folk that they beat, you know, and the reputation that those schools carry. You know, Kentucky, Carolina, Kansas. I mean, you talk about the royalty of college basketball, and they took them all down, you know, back to back to back. That's quite a feat, quite a feat. But it's been an interesting, very interesting tournament. And, in a lot of ways, I'm not surprised that Michigan State is there, because, you know, they have the ingredients that, you know, in recent years have, you know, been what it takes to win a national championship. You know, they have the solid coach, you know, and then the experienced squad, and that's who's been winning, you know, I know for the last, you know, 3 years, in Villanova twice and Carolina. So at this point, that's who I'm riding with. I think the Spartans will prevail.
I had Duke beating Auburn in the finals. So that's a wash. That's a going by the wayside. But they played an excellent ball game. Absolutely excellent. I thought that Duke, maybe Krzyzewski outsmarted himself, much the same way as the Purdue coach outsmarted himself in his game. Instead of putting his ball in the hand of the kid Edwards, who was on fire, tried to go to the other kid that hits threes, and the ball goes off his hands out of bounds. And instead of Krzyzewski going with Williamson, trying to get him to pound something inside, he tried a play to go somewhere else, and it ended up backfiring. So sometimes these guys overthink things.
Well,
go ahead.
On the Purdue play, I don't know even if the ball hadn't gone out of bounds, that would have been a tough, tough shot because he was going away from the basket, had his back to the basket, so he would have to catch it, turn, and shoot. So I don't know. I don't know what that was about. But to your point, though, I would rather have seen the point guard keep the ball and, you know, try to push it on up court and take the shot himself. At least he's going toward the basket, and I think he would have a better opportunity at making the shot.
I think you're right on that. But if you know what, I think we're going to have bring in a guy who I think is going to really have a tremendous insight into what's going to be happening this weekend in Minneapolis. But we want to bring in right now with us probably one of the greatest basketball players in the history of Mercer, tremendous NBA player, 13-year career, great coach. Now he's an associate head coach at University of Memphis. We want to bring on Sam Mitchell. I gave him that tremendous buildup, and Sam is gone. Well, he's out, so I guess we're going to wait. We lost him there. He was in for a second. He was traveling.
He's calling in right now, even as we speak.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But we figured that he would have insight because I think what Memphis is, I'm trying to remember their conference, but I know that they went pretty deep into their conference tournament before they had to bow out. I think they're in Houston's conference, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure of that. And okay, so I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. But again, we have with us tonight a guy who is a really, really knowledgeable basketball guy, and he has a lot going on for him right now as the associate head coach at the University of Memphis, Sam Mitchell. Sam, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening, sir. Hello. This is Tim Turner along with Roscoe Nance on Express Yourself.
How you doing, Tim?
Doing great, sir. We were talking about the tournament, the NCAA tournament, and, you know, we're down to the Final Four, and you're back in the collegiate ranks there in Memphis with the Tigers. And I know you have a really great opinion on the four teams that are still left. How do you see this Final Four shaking out? Or did you even have these guys as your Final Four?
Well, Tim, I'm going to be honest with you, man. When you're in college basketball, you don't fill out a bracket because you feel like you should be playing at this time of year. So it's tough for college coaches this time of year, especially if you didn't make the tournament or in the tournament. But if I was picking, I would probably give a slight advantage to Michigan State because of Tom Izzo, the type of teams he always put on the floor, tough, gritty teams. And in these tournament games, the games normally come down to the end. And, you know, not just making plays offensively, but defensively. So I would give Michigan State a slight advantage. My dog horse pick would be Auburn, with their ability to shoot the basketball and shoot the three. But the question at the end of the day is going to come down to who play their style of basketball. If you're Virginia, you want to run your offense, be patient, wait the teams make defensive mistakes and take advantage of them. And if you're Texas Tech, you're going to do the same. You know, Texas Tech and Virginia really play the same type of offense. They're patient. They get a lot of movement. They wait till the defense make mistakes and then they strike. So I think this is going to be a really good Final Four, even though this may not be the four teams that everybody thought would make it.
Well, it's definitely not the four teams that everybody thought. That's for sure. So why has it shaken out the way that it has, in your opinion, you know, with Kansas, Kentucky, and Carolina going down? What went wrong for those guys?
Well, it's not necessarily anything that went wrong, Roscoe. It's just that the thing that's so great about the NCAA tournament is that it's who's playing the best basketball at the most opportune time. And if you look at those four teams, they all got hot at the right time. And once you get confidence with young players, and that's the thing about college players, pros can struggle and they know at some point they're going to get their game back. It's all about confidence in college. And, you know, these four teams, they got hot at the right time. Their players start making shots and start playing with a lot of confidence. And that's why they're here. You know, everyone expected Duke. But Roscoe and Tim, you guys know this. When was the last time a team with a bunch of one and done won an NCAA championship?
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. It seems to be.
And it wasn't Kentucky, for people listening. No, the year that Cal won it in Kentucky, I think he had two seniors in the starting lineup.
Right. Right. And it you need those guys who've been through the wars a little bit and can handle the ups and downs of a game like that. But you're talking about, I remember you, just thinking about you saying Virginia and Texas Tech play the same type of game, but I'm trying to remember, in the tournament, didn't like Virginia have a game where neither team scored 20 at the half? It was a really slow.
Yeah, they're just going to be very methodical. They're gonna run their offense until they get the shot that they want. They're going to exhaust 20 to 24 seconds off their shot clock each possession. And that's the thing about Virginia Texas Tech. You got to get them down early and make them play a little bit faster and play out of their comfort zone. If you don't, they're just going to grind you in with their offense. And then college players are impatient. They start fouling. And that's when Virginia and Texas Tech get you in trouble.
Now, you being back on the collegiate ranks, is that something you had to adjust to yourself, make that mental adjustment where it's like these kids are going to make mistakes you don't expect from guys at the other level?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to remind yourself these are not pros. Even though you may have talented, these are 18, 19-year-old kids, and they're going to make mistakes. Things are going to happen on the floor. And one thing I had to learn is when you ask players in college why did they do certain things and they look at you and say they don't know, they really don't know. They don't have an answer for you. And so, but again, once you understand that these are young men, 18, 19 years old, they're going to make mistakes, and they're not going to always know why they made those mistakes. You know, you just kind of accept it and you keep moving. But the thing that I do appreciate about college basketball, unlike the difference in the NBA, you listen to teams, they're trying to figure out how to get two or three all-stars on teams. That tells them that they can win. When you look at college basketball, it's not about always, yeah, you have to have talent, but you don't have to have the most talent to win. And the true example of that is Kentucky is going to have four guys that are first-round picks, and they're not playing in the Final Four. I mean, not Kentucky, but Duke. And they're not playing in the Final Four.
Well, you're talking about the talent, and that brings me to recruiting. What was that like? You know, what kind of adjustment was that to have to go out and recruit kids?
Well, I enjoyed it, Roscoe. You know, the thing about it, when I was in Toronto, the head coach of Toronto, we didn't recruit, but we had to do a lot of things off the floor to build our fan base, to get people excited about the product. And so I kind of look at recruiting the same thing. What you're doing is selling yourself and your program. You know, we feel like we're blessed from the standpoint. We have an unbelievable practice facility at the University of Memphis, probably second to none, as nice as any practice facility, even in the NBA. Second, we feel like we have a dynamic coaching staff. You know, Coach Hardaway, our head coach, with his experience and the things that he did in AAU and high school, and now in college and what he did in the NBA, myself, Mike Miller, Tony Madlock, who's been an assistant coach in college and a head coach for 20 years. So we feel like we got a lot of experience, and we really feel like we have a lot to offer to these kids to come to the University of Memphis. And so it's all about selling your program, and everybody got pluses and minuses, but at the end of the day, we're trying to create an environment where these players can be successful, get a good education, and then if they have the talent to play overseas or play in the NBA, we feel like we have the right coaching staff to help that come true.
You know,
now, you've been preoccupied with collegiate basketball for most of the year. How much NBA did you watch, or were you as attuned to that as you were perhaps the college game?
Very little, man. I mean, you know, when you're sitting at home after work and you're watching TV, and you have a chance to watch an NBA game or a team that you're going to be playing eventually in college, you know, you got to watch the college game. Look, I love the NBA, play in the NBA, coach in the NBA, but, you know, right now college is my livelihood. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, college is, I tell you what, man, it's just I enjoy it. I enjoy being around the players, the enthusiasm, how close we are. And the difference between college and the NBA, we spend a lot of time with our players, a lot of time. And so, you know, my wife used to laugh and joke with me all the time. She was like, when you were in the NBA, you would be gone for 2 weeks at a time, and I saw more of you when you coached in the NBA than you coached in the college.
Well, that aside, the game itself, the actual playing of the game, what are some of the differences in the game as the way it's played on the floor? I know the shot clock is one thing.
Roscoe's a little bit longer and things of that nature, but you know, when you look at the college game now, it resembles more of the NBA game. The shot clock is 30 seconds. A lot of college coaches now run a lot of pick and roll. They're really running a lot of NBA stuff because that's what the players are drawn to. That's what the players want to do. So other than the timeouts and little nuances like that, it's basketball, man. Now, the biggest difference is the talent, 1 through 5 on the court. You know, in the NBA, you got 5 guys on the floor at all times that can flat out play in college. You know, unless you're Duke or Kentucky, you're not going to have 5, you know, what I would call 5-star recruits on the floor. So other than the talent level, the basketball is really pretty much the same.
So you go out there every night realistically thinking, we have a chance because these cats, they may have 1 or 2 players, and you pretty much game plan for those guys, right?
Yeah, you have a chance. And let me tell you, Tim, the thing that's about college is you at coaching matters. And coaching matters in the NBA too. But if you don't have 2.5 all-stars, you can win games, but you're not going to compete for a championship. You're not going to compete for a division championship. It just is what it is. But in college, you can have 1 really good player and have the right fit of role players around him, and you can do some damage in college. You can win. And you think about Texas Tech. You know, they got 1 NBA guy, and then all the other guys are just really good college players, and they're in the Final Four.
Well, aren't most of the teams like that? Isn't Auburn essentially that same kind of makeup? Isn't the same? Michigan has probably the most talented squad. But are the other three,
well,
Virginia?
Tim, I couldn't tell you about Auburn, man. They're the SEC. I don't, you know, I watch teams in my conference, man. You know, I'm familiar with them a little bit, but I really hadn't put my eyeballs on Auburn and on none of these teams. Only team I can really probably tell you more about is Texas Tech. It's because we played them. And we played them to a tough game. As a matter of fact, we had them down with 5 minutes to go and let them off the hook. But, you know, when you're in college, man, you don't really watch a lot of basketball outside of your conference or your next opponent because, you know, conference play is tough, man. You know, you can beat a team by 30 at home and you go to their place and you're lucky to win the game by 1. It's a dogfight. Again, because these are college kids, and they react different to hostile environments, different than NBA players.
Well, let's go back to the NBA, and I know you haven't watched a lot of it, but I'm pretty sure you're kind of aware of what's going on with the Lakers and LeBron. What happened there, in your opinion, that it just kind of not...
You know what, Roscoe, man, who knows? Man, who knows, man? You know, you would always think that the word used to always be, you can take any 4 guys in the league and put LeBron James on that team and they can make the playoffs. Well, guess what? That theory is not true. You know, people forget how tough the NBA team, the NBA game is, man. You know, you play 82 games and everybody on a roster can play. Guys in the NBA, that's why you don't see, you know, people ask me this all the time. Why don't you see pressing and trapping in the NBA like they do in college? Well, all 5 guys on the court in the NBA can handle and make plays. So you can't afford to double-team the guy 84 feet in the backcourt because he can dribble, make a pass, and your center can make plays. So, it's college basketball, man. And when you look at the NBA, man, and you look at the Lakers and LeBron and stuff. Look, LeBron's still the best player in the NBA, but it just goes to show you, man. The NBA, man, people are going to come after you. And the Lakers had a big talk with the Lakers. Young players didn't understand. When LeBron James joined that team, they had a target on their back. And I don't think those young players rose to the occasion on a night-to-night basis. And they didn't understand that when LeBron James plays on your team, you're going to get the other team best every night.
Well, the flip side of that is, could age be catching up with LeBron a little bit?
You know what, Roscoe? I'm going to say, yeah, but how do you say that when the guy still averaged 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 9 assists? You know what I'm saying? Shot, I think, 40% from the three. The only weakness in LeBron's game is what? Free throw shooting. So, you know, you would like to say that at some point, but, heck, you can't say that about Tom Brady. He's 40 years old, about to turn 41, and just won the Super Bowl. So, hey, man, there's some guys that can defy father time, and thus far Tom Brady and LeBron James doing a great job of doing it.
Well, I think, and you're right in what you say, you know, they both are still playing at a high level, but it's in a higher level than others have played, you know, at that age. But, you know, for my money, I can see, you know, some slippage, a little bit of slippage. It's just not as dramatic as it has been with others.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you examine it, I'm sure you can, but, you know, you can attribute that to a lot of different things, Rock. So it could be the guys you're playing with. It's just a lot of things, man. And one thing, you have to look at that Lakers roster. If you look at LeBron James, when he was making his run at the finals and all those things, he was surrounded by shooters. Well, the Lakers didn't surround him with shooters. And so, you know, that could have a lot to do with it, just who you're playing with. So who knows, man. But, you know, it's hard to say a guy is slipping at 27, 8, and 9.
Now, you're talking about it'll take maybe on the collegiate level, it'll take maybe one really good ball player and four other guys out there can do pretty well. And I want to just harken back to your Mercer days. That pretty much was your life story, wasn't it? You were the guy.
Nah, man, Tim.
Come on.
No, we had two. People forget, man. The year I came out of Mercer, it was two of us got drafted. Myself and my teammate named Earl Walker. I was drafted in the third round, and Earl was drafted in the sixth round. So back then, it was 7 rounds to the draft. And so I averaged 26, 27 points a game. Earl averaged 19, 20. So I was actually on a very good college team. So, no, it wasn't just about me, but I had some good players around me in college.
Well,
so
Go ahead, Roscoe.
Now, just talk about how you worked your way, you know, into the NBA and, you know, for 13 years. I know you played overseas for a while and that kind of thing.
Roscoe, man, that was so long ago, man. I try to forget those stories because the kids today, man, you know what? It's nice that we played in the NBA, but they don't care, man. It's all about can you help them get to where they want to go. And, you know, I enjoyed my 13 years playing in the NBA. I enjoyed the journey of getting to the NBA. It took me until I was 26 years old to make it to the NBA. A lot of hard work, no guarantees, but I wouldn't change a thing. And it's a lot to do with the person I am today. But, again, man, it's just like I tell the kids today. You know, if you're going to make a living playing basketball, you got to enjoy the grind. You got to enjoy the hard work. And if you don't do that, then you're not going to make it. Because there's a lot of talented players. I wasn't the most talented player. But I think my work ethic, my mental toughness, and my desire just got me over. And, I have no regrets about my career. You know, when I stopped playing basketball, I didn't miss it. And people ask me why. Because I felt like every night I played, I left everything I had on the court. And to me, the only guys who miss it are the guys that look back and feel like they could have done more. And that's one thing about me. I have no regrets about my career because I didn't have anything left to give.
And I know in talking to Donnie Walsh, you know, who you were associated with the Pacers, he often would say that anybody who played in the NBA for 10 or more years was like having a PhD in basketball. And you played 13 years and you have coached NBA, now college, the Virgin Islands women's team. So you have that wealth of knowledge. So what do you feel is next for you?
Well, I don't know, Roscoe. Right now, man, I'm looking forward to the upcoming season at the University of Memphis. We feel like we got a heck of a recruiting class coming in next year. We're still waiting for some more commitments from some guys, but we're excited about next year. Right now, man, I'm just focused on continuing to learn. You know, Larry Brown used to say it all the time. You say this to players and coaches all the time. The day you think you've learned everything there is to learn about basketball is the day you should quit. And so I still feel like I'm a young man with a lot of growth. You know, I'm coaching college basketball now. Just, I'm going into my second season. So I'm excited about it, man. I just feel like, you know, there's always opportunity to grow and get better and to learn. And right now, man, I'm just a student of the game. I'm just continuing to try to hone my craft, be the best person and best coach that I can be. And then hopefully at some point I get the opportunity to lead my own program.
Well, Sam, I'm looking at it from a perspective. I know you're back in your old stomping grounds up there in Minneapolis. And I'm thinking there's a lot of coach-on-coach talk and a lot of basketball being taught. Situations like that, Final Four is an opportunity for you not only just to get to a place where you used to play, but also a place to learn and rub elbows with other guys and pick their brains about what they're doing. Is that pretty much what you're going to be doing over the next couple of days?
Yeah, well, we have coaches' meetings and things that we have to attend, and I've never been to those meetings and things of that nature, so I need to go. You know, I've been to a Final Four to watch the games, but I've never been to the Final Four from the standpoint as an assistant coach. So this is new for me. I'm excited. I'm excited to go to the meetings to learn the things that I need to learn and just to continue to get better. But, again, this is just an opportunity for growth. And never been in this environment before, never been to the Final Four as a coach. I'm excited about it.
Well, I know you'll do a great job. I mean, you've done a great job, you know, everywhere you've been and everything you did. But I just want to ask you this. Is Famous Dave still around in Minneapolis?
Absolutely, man. Famous Dave got some good barbecue, dude.
Oh, they sure do. Now, I certainly owe you a great gratitude for turning me on to that. I was just there at the one here locally Monday, and it's still good.
Well, hey, Famous Dave is the bomb, man. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned it. I may have to get me a little Famous Dave while I'm here.
Well, Sam, we just want to just thank you, man, because it's like you have a wealth of knowledge, and as a guy who grew up around you, with you, I'm extremely proud of the man you've grown into, and and we'll follow you throughout your career, and think that you're doing amazing stuff there. We didn't even talk about your commentary on NBA TV and how you used to really give a lot of insight there, but we just want to thank you for coming on with us tonight.
Well, guys, the pleasure's all mine. Keep doing what you're doing, man, and I'll talk to you guys on the back end.
Okay, Sam, all the best to you.
All right, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Yeah, that is a guy who's in the trenches as a player, comes out of it, and pretty much is putting all that stuff in the rearview mirror to try to give these kids a chance at Memphis, which is admirable.
Yeah, Columbus, Georgia's finest. I tell you, he's that's quite a story. You know the heights that he's risen to, and from whence he came. It's just really amazing. You know. To see him in high school, you never would have thought that he would have, would be where he is today, doing what he's doing, and having done the things that he's done. I mean, that just goes to show you what, like he said, determination and hard work, what it can do for you.
Absolutely, he's just outstanding. Made me think about another kid came out of Columbus High School, and played baseball. He's just a roly-poly fat kid, and, you see him out there trying to play baseball, and they put him at first base because he wasn't agile. And then I found out he signed to play tight end at Auburn, and I wept because I thought that he had developed into a really good baseball player, and him playing football at Auburn, which he did for a season, was the biggest mistake ever, and I'm so glad he eventually quit football and went back to the baseball team. And I'm talking about Hall of Famer Frank Thomas, who was also over there, and another guy who worked really hard, came from a meager upbringing and took off. Another guy who was like, it just seemed to blossom. So, it was like, old home week here when you think about Columbus and think about Frank and you think about what Sam has done. Two tremendous guys.
Yeah, it's been a lot of outstanding athletes to come out of the Columbus, Phoenix City, Alabama area, you know, who've gone on to have outstanding careers and make their mark and in various sports. But we digress.
For sure. I want to go back to the HBCU stuff since, you know, basketball wasn't over for all HBCUs until this past weekend. Until last night, as a matter of fact. I'm thinking it was last night. Texas Southern was in the semifinals of the Collegiate Insiders.com tournament, but they lost in OT 87-86 to Wisconsin Green Bay. They got Sandy Cohen the third, knocked down a 50-foot jumper, 1.5 seconds left to lift Green Bay over Texas Southern. So it wraps up a really strong season. I mean, they were in the semifinals of a postseason tournament. So hats off to the Tigers.
Yeah, and also Hampton was a 2-point loser in their contest. So, you know, both of those teams acquitted themselves well. You know, they were like the last man standing, so to speak, for the HBCUs, which is really, really good. And especially, you know, for Hampton going into a new conference this season and to have that kind of a run, even though it's not, you know, the NIT or the NCAAs, but still, you know, those are national tournaments. And the experience that their guys who will be returning next year gained, you know, can, do nothing but help them. So I'm sure they're excited about the prospects of the 2019-2020 season. You know, where
absolutely,
they should be.
Absolutely. And I was talking to, you know, as I mentioned the same about going to this to Minneapolis for some business as in addition to watching the games. We got somebody else doing some business there out of the SIAC. Brooke Wallace, she's a senior basketball player at Kentucky State. She's been invited to participate in the professional combine for the women's finals down in Tampa. So what's going to happen there is, you know, she's going to get to do some drills and do some position work and scrimmage in front of WNBA coaches and scouts for teams overseas. So it's going to be a really good opportunity for her. I mean, rarely do you see somebody from the SIAC get an opportunity like this. So it's terrific that she helped the Thoroughbreds to the SIAC title this past year. She had 12.5 points and 10.8 rebounds for the season last year. So congratulations to Miss Wallace.
That's a great opportunity for her, and I hope she will take advantage of it because the NBA, you know, while that's in the WNBA, while that's everybody's aspiration. You know, they are not really the only game in town. So, you know, you can make a nice living playing in other places. And, you know, you can find your way back to the major leagues, you know, through via that route. So all the best to her.
Indeed. I look at overseas and how – what I'm thinking over is when the players go over to Europe and to the Middle East and places over there, isn't that money tax free? Don't they have like a bunch of other perks that kind of mitigate the salary disparity that they would have over here?
Yeah, housing, cars, there's a lot of different things to offset, you know, the salary, and so it's you can make a nice living there. I know. Bob McAdoo, you know, was a classic example of that. He had a long career in the NBA, and then he went over there and played, like, forever. Mike D'Antoni, you know, he didn't have an NBA career, but he was, a legend as a player overseas. And there have just been countless others. Audie Norris from Jackson State, you know, he played a long time for Barcelona. So there's just any number of athletes who've done that.
You talk about Barcelona. It seems like that's the center of a great basketball play. Great teams are over there. The Spanish League is great. I'm thinking South America is where players are really outstanding. And I think the NBA, when you talk about with the men's game now, the talent's there for the natives, not so much the foreigners. And I think Greg Popovich does such an excellent job of mining those different leagues to find super players. I mean, that's like the Spurs are generally the UN of the NBA. They know what people look like. And I was thinking the other day when somebody was making mention of who was the greatest foreign basketball player to ever play, foreign-born basketball player to ever play, and they were like, you know, because Dirk Nowitzki may retire this year, and it is as if people forgot that Hakeem Olajuwon was born.
Well, you know how it is. Anything that, you know, didn't happen in, you know, since 2000 doesn't count.
Yeah, I look at that and just go, man, that just shake my head. That dude there. I mean, I lived in Houston for 5 years and was there for their back-to-back NBA titles, and there's nobody better for my money as far as a foreign-born player.
People have such short memories. Such short memories. But there have been some truly great foreign players, and, you know, they keep coming. And really,
that they do.
The NBA is tailored now for the European big guys, big man's game, because, you know, they, you know, were the forerunners of the stretch four concept.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you think back, that was basically their game. They were, you know, big guys, but they weren't power players. They, you know, hung on the perimeter and shot. And, you know, Vita Sabonis, you know, even though he wasn't at his prime when he came over here, you know, he played at the high post. And, you know, he was a wizard, you know, passing the ball and making plays from the high post. So they sort of revolutionized the NBA in a lot of ways.
Well, that's where I look at this year. And I always will go to the Hawk reference. I wasn't a big fan of the Trae Young for Luka Doncic trade because I thought Doncic was going to be the better ball player. Granted, Young has really come on late in the season, but watching Luka take the ball from end to end, and I think he's still a teenager, he's a marvel to watch play basketball. And he's indicative of, you know, how those guys have grown to playing the game the way the guys over here play.
Right.
And he hasn't been overmatched.
But one of the advantages they have is that, you know, they turn pro at such an early age. You know, and when I say pro, I mean, you know, being paid and, you know, with club teams and that kind of thing, not like AAU here. When guys here playing AAU, those guys are really overseas or with professional club teams and in a professional environment, you know, and learning how to play the game and learning how to be professionals at the same time. So that gives them a leg up.
Well, that's just and it shows when they come over. You know, there are names I haven't heard of or will not have heard of, and they'll get drafted. And I look at these teams like for instance, Porzingis, who's with the Knicks. Never had heard of him. Thought that was just a humongous thing. He could play. He's fragile, but he could play.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
These people they do scout.
And
they do make wise decisions that way. I think, and then
let's not get carried away.
Some of them
make wise decisions, but
well,
a lot of them.
I think the Chicago Bulls struck gold in what a name that our producer Ricky Hampton just tossed out in Tony Kukoc. The Bulls, okay, I'll say it. The Bulls don't win their championships without Tony Kukoc. They may have had another guy on the team that might have been pretty good. But he made a difference in Chicago.
Well, I won't debate that. But what about my man up in Toronto, Bagnani?
Yes. He's making a difference for those cats now. And Toronto's another team that did.
What difference is he making?
What difference is he making?
I mean, he was one of the busts of all busts.
Well,
took him
okay.
rather than Aldridge.
So are we going to talk about busts now? Who was the guy that was drafted by the Pistons and they could have gotten somebody
Darko
else?
My main man, Darko Milicic.
Okay, and who got drafted after him?
Oh, who didn't get drafted after him? He was what, like the number two pick?
Yeah.
Dwayne Wade, Carmelo, Kirk Heinrich.
Everybody.
You name it. Everybody. Everybody but LeBron. Yeah. So
you know, people get enamored sometimes with these foreign guys too, and they try to get this international flair, which is not a problem, not a problem at all. Let's move to other sports and other acts. Well, just one more college note: since Duke is out, they lost in the first round. Do you think Zion Williams should come back to try
For
to
what?
Win a title?
For what?
Or do you think he should go
For
ahead
what?
And get
For
get
what?
Paid?
For what?
For the old college try.
He gave it the old college try. I mean, come on, man, get real.
Well, I've heard rumors that he's saying, I want to come back and win a title for Duke.
Well, when did he say that?
A couple of days ago. I guess it was an emotional thing after losing
Right after they lost.
Right.
Now that he's sobered up, I'm sure you won't hear him repeat that.
I don't know about sobered up from mom and dad. They probably got up there and said, you've lost your mind.
I mean, not sobering up from alcohol, but sobering up from that, from drinking the Blue Devil Kool-Aid. My man, De'Aaron Fox, you know, he cried like a baby when Kentucky lost. But those tears didn't bring him back to Kentucky.
You know, he's been crying for 82 games with the Sacramento Kings since then, hadn't he?
Yep. All the way to the bank. Crying all the way to the bank.
So, so it makes a difference on some level, doesn't it?
Yep. No,
one of the Carolina kids, I think, has declared for the NBA draft as of today, I believe.
Was it Little?
Kobe White.
Okay.
I think it's the kid with the big hair.
Okay. I like him, but I really thought that he hurt Carolina against Auburn. Seemed like to me he was trying to do too much and trying to win the game by himself at one point.
He was out of control for a taste. Now we got a little break in here, a little low. I want to just ask you guys, you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 929-477-1209. Again, the call number is 929-477-1209. It seemed like Roy Williams put a lot on the kid as well. I mean, you could tell him not to try to take the game over, but it seems as if he wanted to win the game for Carolina.
Yeah, but you know, you have to know how to win. And you have four teammates out there with you, and you have to use them. That's why they're out there. They're not out there just to inbound the ball to you for you to do whatever. You know, you have to make plays for them and also play off them. And I think in a lot of instances, that's where, you know, the super talented guys missed the point. I sincerely think that was one of Allen Iverson's shortcomings. And people said, you know, he was, ball hog and all this stuff. But I think that he just, he wanted to win. And he felt that the best way for Philly to win was for him to do that. And also it didn't help that that the way that the Sixers were constructed, you know, breeded that, because, you know, if, let's face it, if he didn't shoot the ball, who else on that team could shoot the ball and be counted on to make a shot other than Aaron McKee?
True. Yeah. I was looking at the Allen Iverson story over the weekend, and I really had not heard about how the depths of his background and what and the transformation that he got into when he made it with the Georgetown under John Thompson, and just the guy that, how he became just a tremendous ball player that way. And I could see where he would feel like it's all on me to try to win stuff, because I think he's always had that mentality.
Yeah.
It's all on me.
And two, he had a football player's mentality, you know, because he was a really outstanding quarterback, and that's why, you know, he could play with that reckless abandon and, you know, take the punishment when he went to the basket, you know. I mean, he was a tough player, and I think he, in a lot of ways, is underappreciated. You know, he was somebody to be reckoned with, really, really and truly.
Was he 6 foot tall?
Probably not. Probably closer to 5'11", 5'10". But
and see, that to me, that just blows my mind that a guy could be like that and take the pounding for year after year, and, you know, go in and out. He was an incredible talent.
And when he hit the floor, he hit the floor. I mean, you know, maybe 165 pounds, maybe. But, you know, he had no fear. He had no fear.
Well, that's terrific on his part. I mean, with a football mentality, you want to morph over into football. There's a couple of football notes, and one of them, folks may laugh and break up about the breakup of it or the suspension of it, but I was really hoping the AAF would survive, but they suspended operations this week. These guys, when they started out, they thought they were good financially for at least 2 years, and they didn't make it past 8 games. So,
you know, my biggest regret about that is that I never took the time to watch any of the games. So, and now that it's gone, I hate that I didn't, because I'm sure there were some talented players in that league, because there are so many you know, really good football players out there who you know, don't get seen, don't get an opportunity, and this was an opportunity for them to show their wares. It would have been an opportunity for them to show their wares and, you know, make that dream come true, perhaps at least get a shot at making that dream come true. So who knows what will happen next. But my understanding that the XFL is on the way back. So.
Oh, yeah, that's the next one. Backed by Vince McMahon, and I understand that the AAF begged McMahon to buy them. So they were so desperate for trying to find cash. But I watched maybe 4 games, and the talent, I mean, it was a good product to watch. It wasn't really sloppy football. It wasn't bad football. I was more so embarrassed by the crowds. I watched the game out of Orlando, one out of Birmingham, one out of Memphis. I think another one out of – I think it might have been 2 out of Memphis. Nobody came to the games in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody came to the games in Orlando. I mean, in Birmingham. I don't know if it's Birmingham or not, but some of the cities they were in, the games that I did see, the crowds are really sparse. But the talent was there. They had some NFL cast-offs, and had they somehow struck a deal to be like a feeder league with the NFL, maybe it would have survived. But they didn't. They were out there on their own, you know, doing their thing.
My understanding is that was one of the hiccups with the league, is that they weren't able to use NFL practice squad guys. They were never able to work out an arrangement to do that. So, and I think that's what led to the investor pulling out, which is unfortunate. But
That was something that you did not really see coming. There's a couple of NFL notes. One, which is really an off-the-field note, where Matthew Stafford's dealing with a situation that's far greater than football, where his bride has a tumor on her brain, and she's going to in the next 2 weeks she's going to have surgery, try to have it removed, and there's always these ramifications. She may not be able to hear. She may lose the ability to do some other functions. If something happens during the surgery. There's the risk of not doing it versus the risk of doing it. So I'm quite sure that he's pretty much going to be a wreck when they eventually do it. So, you think about there's some things that are bigger than the game, and this is something that's pretty big for the Stafford family.
Yeah, that's a real reality check, you know. It, makes interceptions and fumbles and that's the kind of thing, makes it, pretty irrelevant, when you're talking about something that serious. We certainly wish them all the best and that things will go well, because I can't imagine.
I'm thinking of how this, a trivial note, it would seem to the other side where, you got a millionaire who there's an opportunity there that Russell Wilson is up for contract extension. And he said he's not going to sit out. He's not going to hold out, but he really wants to be paid. And he seems like he's going like a tacit PR tour, making himself very visible during this offseason to see what happens with he and the Seahawks. No doubt they're going to give him, give him something. But I can't see him being the highest paid player quarterback in the league, based on track record on recent stuff.
And why not?
I mean, what have they done recently? I mean, their Super Bowl years are a distant memory.
So who is the highest paid player? Highest paid quarterback?
I think right now. Well, let me look at this way. I'm trying to think of who it is.
Aaron Rodgers. And who was his last Super Bowl?
Oh, maybe it was before Russell.
Right.
But I think that with eight of the top 10 quarterbacks, salary wise, did not make the playoffs last year.
So why not Russell? And two, you have to look at what he means to the team.
Oh, yeah, you look at that, because I don't know who their number two is. That's a rotating thing. They had the kid. It was a Texas Tech who couldn't stay out of trouble. Boy,
who were their running backs?
Really good.
Who were their running backs? Besides Doug Baldwin, who were their receivers?
Offensive threat?
Yeah.
Well, Lockett.
Who's the tight end?
I was about to say Jimmy Graham, but he's in Green Bay. Who is the tight end?
Yeah, so,
Well, so what you're saying is they have money to give.
Well, I'm not saying they have money to give, but they need to find money to give him because he's so valuable to the team. I mean, the way that he's able to extend plays, make plays, and the things that he does for that team, and I can understand him wanting to be compensated accordingly, especially, when you see guys who have accomplished nearly what he's accomplished, getting these big paydays.
True. It just baffles you sometimes with the money and things are thrown around, and sometimes people are underappreciated, which is what I guess I am with Russell, because he makes plays. I would welcome him on the Falcons more so than the guy that is there now, and I really would, because
I think you would welcome me more than the guy who's there now.
Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah. You trot out there and you can put on some Chuck Taylors out there in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium and toss a few around. I just want to see a guy who I think puts it out there every game and is a winner. But I digress. I want to just pop over to an NBA note and something that's like a cross-cultural thing, and it shows my age as an old man. Russell Westbrook gets a 20-20-20 triple-double, and he dedicates it to Nipsey Hussle, who's an activist there in South Central Los Angeles, rapper, Grammy-winning, award-winning rapper, who was shot and killed in front of his store on Sunday. And from what I understand, kids everywhere were broken up by this. And I kept thinking, were they saying Nipsey Russell? I'm dating myself. I had no clue who this guy was.
Welcome to the club. If you had.
But I understand that this was a devastating loss for a lot of folks. My son, as a matter of fact, one of them.
Yeah, that was tragic and just underscores the need for some type of gun legislation to get, you know, guns off the street and not have them so accessible. It's nonsensical, and you know, we hear so much talk about a crisis, and for my money, you know, the gun problem is a real crisis. I mean, they're just too many guns that in the wrong people's hands, and the people who don't use guns responsibly, and something just needs to be done about it. And
absolutely,
I'm a firm believer that if we can put a man on the moon and do a lot of the other things that, you know, we've been able to do as Americans, that we can figure out a way to get this gun issue under control if we really wanted to.
Well, we're motivated to do anything we want to. We can find millions of dollars to fight wars abroad, but we can't do anything about what's going on in the streets here in the United States, which is a sad thing. And it's a tragic loss of life, but like I said, he was a cultural icon for so many folks. And then when it bleeds over to where you get like the NBA players are thinking about him and doing things like what Russell Westbrook did, which totally just blew me away that, you know, that's somebody of their generation. It'd be the same if it's like Marvin Gaye or somebody went out in our time, that kind of
right.
thing. So I can get what they're talking about.
And I guess to a lesser extent, it was like when Dr. King was killed. To a much lesser extent, but it was that I guess for Russell it was that same kind of personally for him it was that same kind of feeling, I imagine.
For sure, it had to have been. Well, I think we've exhausted this hour, and we want to thank our guest Sam Mitchell, terrific guy, terrific coach. Wishing him well there at University of Memphis. We thank him for his insight on the game of basketball, and for just giving us his take on being back there in college, being on the collegiate level, on his first collegiate coaching assignment after being in the pros for so many years. So until next time, we'll have an NBA NCAA champion in men's and women's basketball, and we want to talk about those things the next time we see you guys. So Roscoe, what are we gonna do?
We're going to, as always, express yourself.
See y'all next time.